Hello, this is the podcast for our class number 3 on August the 30th, and in this we just continue talking about the standard of care that we have introduced in the last couple of classes, and now we're continuing along with this. Remember, we've always put this in the context of the elements of negligence, duty, breach, causation, proximate cause, damages. Now we're in talking about breach of our duty of care. Remember, there's a duty when you do something affirmatively to behave, to uphold the standard of care. And our standard of care is reasonable care. So all we're talking about now is how to meet that standard, what the definition of it is, and who gets to decide it. So again, when we're talking about setting the standard of care, just remember reasonable care is our standard. How do we define it? That's the more difficult area. How do we know when it's been met? That's even more difficult. But I've just informally said it's kind of the distinction between could have done more and should have done more. We can always make things safer, but the law doesn't require that we make things as safe as possible. We just have to eliminate risks that are unreasonable. So again, was it under Braun, was it an unreasonable risk to have overhead wires hanging down that were not insulated? The court says, yeah. In Adams v. Bullock, Cardoza said, well, it wasn't unreasonable to have these overhead wires for trolley cars. What's the difference? It's a question of fact. We don't have to have ordinary prevision of the risks and eliminate all risks. We have to just eliminate unreasonable risks. And the question of foreseeability comes in. Foreseeability of risk is a way to determine whether that risk is reasonable or not. So foreseeability kind of looks at the probability of accidents happening, the risk of accidents happening. And again, we don't have to foresee all risks. We just have to eliminate all risks. We just have to look to unreasonable risks. And foreseeability just is a way to determine whether a risk is reasonable or unreasonable. In Carroll Towing, we said it was an effort on the part of Judge Learned Hand to quantify whether a risk is reasonable or unreasonable. He uses foreseeability here as one of the factors. How probable is it that an accident's going to happen under similar fact situations? What's the burden of preventing that accident? How much would it cost to prevent it? And if you don't prevent it, what's the average kind of loss that you can anticipate? So the hand formula was just a way of attempting to quantify these variables that make up reasonable care or a lack of reasonable care. The hand formula, as we talked about, it kind of works as a set of guidelines. As a formula, it's deficient. It's hard to know how much something would be to cost to eliminate risk. It's hard to formulate to the probabilities or the foreseeability of the risk. And figuring out the loss is very difficult if we're talking about personal injury as opposed to property damage. So this famous formula can be helpful as in a guidelines rather than a formula. And really, it's rarely used, but it's always thought of as just kind of an economic basis for showing reasonable care. then we move to talk about the notion of who gets to decide or define the reasonable person. Can we know our standard is reasonable care, reasonable person? It's an external standard, not an internal standard. It's community standards. But how do we instruct the jury? We saw from Bethel that it's best to have one consistent standard rather than have any higher or lower standards for any class of individuals or enterprises. So Bethel eliminated this notion of a very high standard of care for common carriers and said it's the same standard of care for everyone, reasonable care under the circumstances, and you take into account individual behavior or individual situations in the definition of under the circumstances. So a single rule is flexible enough to take into consideration whether something's a common carrier, whether it's a private carrier. Reasonable care under the circumstances means that their situation is just one aspect of the circumstances. Again, if we're talking about external care, objective conduct instead of state of mind, we look to community expectations. Individual circumstances can be taken into consideration, and we saw that children, for example, get treated differently. We saw that people with physical disabilities get treated as reasonable care, the standard of a reasonable person with a like disability. The only deviation from these kinds of things that stand out is the mental disability. We hold mentally disabled people to just a consistent, reasonable care standard, even though they cannot possibly meet it. And the reason behind this is, as opposed to an innocent plaintiff and an individual who creates an injury, we don't want the plaintiff to suffer. And if somebody is so lack in self-control, so lack in discipline, then perhaps they shouldn't be independently allowed to live independently or independently active. So that, keep in mind that we have a common standard. It's flexible, but individuals are judged to a consistent external standard. Then who gets to do the judging? That question came up in Goodman and Pecor. Is it the judge or the jury? We always say the jury, but in Goodman, Judge Oliver Wendell Holmes said, well, a judge can decide. Pecor had to come along and overrule that. Is it standards or rules? And as Cardozo said, a jury can decide what common standards that we live amongst. So very rarely do we look upon judges to determine the side, but in our next case in Aikens is a situation that does allow a judge-made rule of law to set a standard. So next class, we're going to start on page 64 with Aikens.